Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball this morning. A very, very special day has passed, and that is August 5th of 2021. And for many who did not know it, it was the 100th anniversary of the first live broadcast of a baseball game. And it happened in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Pirates against the Phillies in Pittsburgh. KDKA was the station, and the Pirates ended up beating the Phillies 8-5. So it's known as the first live broadcast of a baseball game on the radio. So we're very fortunate today to have a very, very, very special person with us. Let me tell you about her. Donna Halper is an associate professor of communication and media studies at Lesley University in Massachusetts. She joined Sabre in 2011, and her research focuses on women and minorities in baseball, the Negro Leagues, and firsts in baseball history. A former radio DJ credited with having discovering the rock band Rush, Dr. Halper reinvented herself and got her PhD at age 64. In addition to her research into baseball, she's also a media historian, thank goodness, with expertise in the history of broadcasting. She has contributed to Sabre's Games Project and Bio Project, as well as writing several articles for the Baseball Research Journal. And she is eminently qualified to talk about this subject today and others. Donna, great to have you with us. How are you?
You know something? I'm happy to be walking around. What a privilege to be on with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we love having you. And again, this was a monumental day on Thursday, August the 5th of 1921. It was the first radio broadcast of a baseball game. And look where we've gone since then, my goodness. So
can I tell you something funny about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you had been reading the newspapers back then, you never would have known about it. And there was a very good reason for that. The newspapers back then thought of radio as competition. So if radio did something, doesn't matter what it was, if radio did something, there were an awful lot of stations that got no publicity whatsoever from the print media. And we only know about this event because of the fact that Harold Arlen and the folks at KDKA, which was Westinghouse, they had a massive publicity department. And so they kind of went out and told the story. And sometimes that's what it took. You know as well as I do, publicity is the name of the game.
Well, it was a very special day in Pittsburgh. It's so rudimentary, though, the way it happened, this 500-watt station. Harold Arlen is the play-by-play. Set the stage for us. And how did he do it? What did he have for a microphone and things like that?
Well, probably he would have had a carbon microphone because that's what they were using back then. Now, I'm sure every engineer in your audience is going to call you now and say, no, it wasn't. It was a, you know, but I believe it was a carbon microphone. And what I know is it was pretty primitive. It was pretty rudimentary. It wasn't fancy and schmancy. There was no color analyst. There weren't like 17 people in the booth. There was probably just him. Like, fast forward a couple of years later, here in Boston, where I live, and WNAC broadcast the first Red Sox game in 1926. And the guy that did it is a guy named Gus Rooney. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, who? Yeah, that's the point. He was a print journalist. No one had ever heard of him outside of print. Long story short, the game goes 4 hours, and Gus is alone, okay? So lucky for Harold Arlen, the game did not go into extra innings. It didn't go 4 hours, because if he had to, how shall we say politely, use the facilities, he would have been up the creek. He had to do it all by himself. Now, the good news is, doing it all by himself, people had no expectation that there was going to be, you know, a color person and a person to do analysis and 16 of your friends and interviews. They didn't expect any of that. In fact, the people that were hearing it were like, there's a baseball game. Is there this much wonderfulness in the world? People were just delighted. Baseball was coming right into their home. for people that couldn't afford to go to the game or get the time off, they were just delighted. So maybe the audio quality wasn't so great. So what? It was baseball. And that began something that we still have today. To this day, there are people who cannot get enough of baseball on the radio, even though there's TV, there's the internet. But the best radio announcers, and by all accounts, Harold Arlen was a very good radio announcer. The best radio announcers, they paint a picture using words. And by all accounts, the people that listened to that broadcast, they could not have been happier. By today's standards, yeah, one guy, it went on. But back then, people were amazed.
Well, 100 years ago, August 5th, 1921, the first broadcast. Dr. Donna Halper is with us, and a pleasure to hear the stories from you, Donna. I just sit back and listen. There was no booth, though, in those days. Today we have elaborate booths to broadcast from. Where was he when he did the broadcast?
Oh, he was probably down near the field, okay? In the case of most of the broadcasters back then, again, they were pretty much winging it. They were making it up as they went along. We do have some pictures from those days, and it's like, yeah, they sat just about anywhere that they could. And so we have some cases where they sat in the box seats. Okay, we have other cases where they sort of, you know, pulled up a chair. There was one case where they sat in the dugout. That probably was annoying to some people. But when you're first, you really are just kind of making it up. Now, think about what went before that, Marty, okay? So if you're living in 1920, how do you hear a ball game? The answer, you went down to the offices of your favorite newspaper, and you stood out in front, and you waited for the telegraphers to telegraph the results, the scores, to the newspaper. And a newsboy, and sometimes a newsgirl, would come running down, and they'd put up the scores on a chalkboard. And people would come by during their lunch hour, and they'd cheer, and they'd boo. And it just became like a kind of a communal event. It was very egalitarian. Again, we have pictures. There were men, there were women, people of all colors. It was incredible. And compared to having to get a little time off from work and walk down to where the newspapers were, this was paradise. Now, was it paradise for the announcers? Let's go back to poor Gus Rooney. It's Boston in April. It's like 40 degrees, and he's doing a four-hour broadcast by himself. He couldn't talk for 2 weeks. He had such bad laryngitis when he got done. Okay? And that's a true story. So the fact remains that for Mr. Arlen, however it was, he knew he was making history. He knew that maybe there were some other stations in other cities that were trying this. But by and large, if you wanted scores back then, you had to have a friend who was an amateur radio operator, because they would get the scores by telegraph and they would let you know. Other than that, this was an amazing first, and it set the stage for a lot of others. Now, there's many myths in broadcasting, okay? Particularly like, what was the first station? Who did this? Who did that? But whether or not there had been another broadcast, this is the first one we know about. And once you've opened that door, once you've made it possible, anything can happen.
Mm. Later on that season, 1921, there was a broadcast of the World Series, but it was not a live broadcast. How did they do that?
Oh, they did recreations. And recreations are going to be as American as apple pie, okay? And the vast majority of the listeners probably didn't know because, and Marty, you know this as well as anyone, radio is theater of the imagination. So with a few sound effects, you can create that you're an astronaut up in space and make it sound like you really are up there. And you can make it sound like you're, oh my God, there's the crack of the bat, and they're running to first base. And so what they would do is they would have a telegrapher, a guy or a gal that did the telegraph with the Morse code, and you'd get the results, and you'd get the little, you know, three strikes, you know, next batter up. And then you'd just fill it in like it was a story. Oh, he took a called third strike. Now, it could have been he struck out swinging. It was totally up to you, okay? You just got the bare-bones story of what was happening. Ball one, ball two, that kind of thing. And then if you were good at it, you told it like a story. And people didn't know that you weren't there because, with a few sound effects, you sounded like you were there. They had crowd noises. They had applause. They had boos and cheers. They had that cracking sound for the crack of the bat. It was an art form. Today we kind of mock it, but let's see you do it, okay? You know, let's see you get a telegraphed report on a piece of paper, and you turn it into something. But that's what these people did.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous story. Donna, let me ask about when was the first live broadcast? In other words, when did it all happen as commonplace? Because we have this, then we have the telegrapher and the recreations. When did radio become sort of more common to do live broadcasts?
Well, to be honest with you, there is no one date. Here's what happened, okay? In early broadcasting, at first, in 1921, there's still just a handful of radio stations. And if you're lucky, you're in a city that has one. San Francisco, Oakland, they had one, okay? Boston, we had one. But a lot of cities did not until early 1922. And in early 1922, something happened called the radio craze of 1922. And it was, in fact, a craze. We went from maybe 20 stations to 232 of them. Mm. And that's not a mythical number. By the end of the year, we get 500. Radio is bursting out all over everywhere. And every city wants to have its own station. Cities are like, oh, my God, live, local broadcasting. And if you're going to be live and local, you want to broadcast what's happening in your city. So maybe there's a minor league team that you have. Maybe there's semi-pro. Maybe there's amateurs. High school? Doesn't matter. If it's happening in your town, you want to find a way to get there and broadcast it. And so we find, by the middle of 1922, with radio sweeping the country, more and more stations are trying to find ways to actually do stuff live. The technology gradually starts improving, and pretty soon you are hearing kind of a schedule of games. It's no longer a one-off and everybody goes, wow, will they ever do that again? Pretty soon you're starting to hear like 7 or 8 or 10 or 20 games in the course of a season. People are amazed. But this all started happening in 1922, and it escalated even more in 1923.
Great story. Dr. Donna Halper is with us, as you can tell, an expert in media, baseball history as well, and tells a great story, Donna, a former DJ, too, in your background. Did baseball embrace this? Did baseball like it? Did the owners like the fact that they would have these games broadcast on the radio?
Yes and no. Same thing, by the way, with concerts. The musicians were very nervous that if they allowed their records to be played on the radio, people wouldn't come to their concerts. Same thing with Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball. A lot of the owners were like, uh-oh, if we let you broadcast a game, no one will show up anymore. Turned out quite the opposite. Turned out that the musicians need not have worried. By having their records played on the radio, people were more interested in seeing them, not less. Same thing with baseball. When people heard a game, they were like, wow, I'd like to go. This is an era where, you know, we think of social inequality as like, oh, yeah, that's pretty modern. Nah, that was happening back then, too. And you had a lot of people who used to gather out in front of department stores where, in order to sell radios, they would have a public, you know, they would let the public hear what the radio sounded like. So you get all these people standing out in front listening to a baseball game who might not have been able to afford to go. And suddenly they were like, I got to save my money. I want to be at the ballpark. That sounds like a lot of fun. So, yeah. For the teams that were losing, it probably didn't do that much harm. It probably didn't do that much good. It didn't really. It was kind of a wash. But for the teams that were winning, people are listening to these broadcasts at the corner of the street where the department store is, and they're thinking, oh, my God, why can't I be at the ball game? I'm going to save my money. I want to go to the ball game. So rather than being a problem, it turns out to be something good. Now, does every owner get won over? No. There are some owners that, like, to the end, were kind of like, you're not broadcasting our games. But there were a few others that were like, well, yeah, I suppose we ought to let you. Here in Boston, we didn't get the first game broadcast until 1925. And I've done some very interesting research on this. And I found out that the first person to broadcast a baseball game in Boston was the comedian and vaudevillian Joe E. Brown. Some of you may be familiar with him.
Oh, I saw his movies, and he also did the pregame for the Yankees in 1952.
For one year. And before that, he owned a minor league team. Turns out that when he wasn't being a vaudevillian and when he wasn't starring in comedies, he loved baseball. And he had been brought to town by a reporter who was friends with him, and they, at the absolute last minute, WBZ in Boston got the chance to do a Braves game, the Boston Braves. And they had no announcer because, you know, broadcasting games was not a thing. And Joey Brown was standing there, and he was like, I'd like to try to do it. And they shoved a microphone in front of his face and said, congratulations, play-by-play. Wow. And he did. And the newspapers loved it.
And what a great story.
That's how Boston got their first baseball game on the radio in April of 1925.
Wow, what a great story. We can go on forever. The evolution.
Can I give you one more quick one? Because this will take 7 seconds here.
Please.
I could not do a broadcast or I could not do an interview without talking about the first Negro Leagues game to be on the air. Because for many years, the owners and the owners of radio stations pretty much ignored the Negro Leagues, even though they were wildly popular with the fans, both black and white fans, I must say. There's a lot of research on this. But it wasn't until August 7th, 1942, that a Negro Leagues game finally got on the radio. It was broadcast by a Washington, D.C. station. Station's still around, WWDC. And it was the Baltimore Elite Giants against the Washington Homestead Grays. They were battling for the pennant in 1942. It was in Baltimore at Bugle Field. And that was the first time that a Negro Leagues game had been broadcast, even though the Negro Leagues had been around since 1920.
Donna, it's great to have you on. It really is. We've got so much more to talk about, which we're going to do. But I appreciate your being on and explaining the history of radio and baseball. And as we pass the 100th anniversary of that first game in Pittsburgh on KDKA. Donna, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I hope I was halfway interesting.
Come on. I wish we had another hour to talk. And we'll do this again. We will do this
again.
Thank you. What a pleasure. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.